Hey guys, welcome to the Days in the Wild podcast, formerly Interviews with the Hunting Masters. Yep, we changed the name, but not the format, nothing like that. Everything's going to stay the same and try to keep it as streamlined as possible, bring you the same type of content. I'm open for suggestions, so if anybody wants to send me, drop me a line. You know, most of these podcasts come about from questions that are generated by you. So please keep those questions coming, and we'll get them answered. The official changeover will be April 1st. Put that on your calendar, please, April 1st, because you may need to go in and resubscribe to the show depending on the platform that you're in. So keep that in mind. Interviews with the Hunting Masters, it's on that URL now. It's going to change over Days in the Wild, and there is a slight possibility that you may need to resubscribe. So, April 1st, keep that in mind. So, before we roll into this next episode, I want to talk to you a little bit about conservation and some of the things that we can be doing out there. A woman actually asked me today, she's on Instagram, she was like, how... You know, I'm not trying to be sly or try to be whatever. She said, I just want to know what it is you get out of hunting. Why do you hunt? Educating the non-hunting public about why you do what you do, the benefits of hunting, talk to them about the North American model of conservation and the Pittman-Robinson Act, all that stuff. Educate yourself first, you know, so you don't sound like a dum-dum like I do often. And really, you know, arm yourself with the tools to educate people on the benefits and what we do and why. Because I can't tell you how many times I talk to people and they just automatically assume that their tax dollars is what funds, you know, their income tax or their property tax or whatever, they think it funds conservation, and it doesn't. So educate yourself, arm yourself with those, and be ready to, you know, educate the non-hunting public. And another thing I want you guys to go, if you're not already a member of, you know, Mule Deer Foundation, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, stuff like that, get involved. The Mule Deer Foundation is awesome. We just got back from the Hunt Expo. They do a lot of excellent stuff out there. Go to muledeer.org and become a member. If you're already a member, there's things on the website where you can look up and find other ways to get involved. If you're not a member, become a member. It's super easy. It's a tax write-off. It's helping the end goal. So get on their website, check out the Mule Deer Foundation, go check out Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Wild Sheep Foundation, all these organizations. Get involved as many as you possibly can. You know, I'm not saying if you can't afford it, we understand. Do what you can do. If you could put in some sweat equity, check on their websites and see if they have any programs for you to get involved. Thanks a lot, and let's roll into this next episode. Hey, welcome to Days in the Wild podcast. We're here at the Hunting Expo in Utah, and we're sitting with a good friend of mine, Robbie Den. And Robbie's going to share a couple stories with us.
Man, I got a couple, but you know me, I can go for hours. So at some point, we got to go to lunch and go to the bathroom, so I better be careful.
Yep, for sure. So before we get to any of those, you had a pretty good season. You had a nice you got a nice buck this year.
I did. I got that muzzleloader buck. That's one I was going to talk about on there. But it was a pretty slow season, really. I had three tags, and they were all in kind of a 200-mile circle across two states. And, you know, we've talked about this before, man. I try to get laser focused on it and, you know, not spread myself too thin, because I've screwed that up too many times. And I was going to hunt a high country rifle buck hunt. And then I had some low country October stuff that I was going to hunt. And But I got looking at my schedule, and all those tags closed by about the end of October. Okay. And so I thought, man, that's an awful short hunting season. Man, I got to hunt longer than that. And I had a friend that had – when I say a friend, just more of a good acquaintance is right. What it was. See him all the time, how you doing? And he'd always said, hey, man, you should go muzzleloader hunting with me sometime. And, you know, the schedule never worked. And I don't like I told you before, I don't like to go anywhere I haven't scouted
right.
or I don't know or I'm not or going with somebody that's been there.
Right.
And so as I was looking at it, I know his muzzleloader hunts in November, and it's a draw hunt, but it's really easy to draw. It's not quite over the counter, but the kind of hunt you can get every other year. So I asked him, I said, hey, my November's open. Do you want to do anything? And cool guy. Oh, yeah, dude, you're more than welcome to come. And he had killed a 28-inch buck there about 3 years
nice.
Ago. And, you know, good deer hunter, somebody I trust,
right.
you know, and you know, to spend a week's vacation on and, you know, not end up hunting with somebody that all they're worried about is going down to the bar every night and that kind of stuff. You know, he's not that type of guy. He's pretty hardcore. But so anyways, backing up a little bit, I had that early high country hunt, started scouting in like July. And I looked at about 100 bucks, John, between
wow.
about the middle of July and the third week of August. And, you know, for the country that I'm in, that's actually down a little bit. I should have seen more bucks than that. But we've
okay.
had a lot of killer winters the last 3 years. You know, two out of the last 3 years have been pretty tough on our deer. But, you know, it's not a disaster. Obviously, I saw 100
right.
bucks. But and everybody that hunts in those couple of mountain ranges right there were telling me that what you're seeing is pretty accurate. They say we got a decent number of deer, but you're not going to see very many top-end deer. Mm. Got a lot of nice up-and-coming bucks, 3-4-year-old bucks. And sure enough, that's kind of what I saw all summer. It wasn't really hard to find bucks, but I got I was going to start archery hunting September, early September is when it opened, and the 24th of August, I still had two or three days left to go, and so loaded up the horses, went back up in the high country, and found a giant, or just under giant
right,
status,
right, right.
you know, so... And I got to look at him at about 2.5 miles, and I spotted him in the BTXs over on another mountain, mm. almost a different part of the range.
Jesus.
And you know, when you've seen 100 bucks in the summer, and you know your mind just starts kind of categorizing them without scoring them.
Right.
You know, you just look at them and you know. I mean, you probably do this all the time in Arizona, just like that's a good buck. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
I don't need to worry about a tape measure. I don't worry about nothing. He
right.
was one of those kind of bucks, and he was coming up into some almost elky looking meadows, but it was
okay.
on a steep hillside. It wasn't, you know, flat meadows.
Right.
It's on a big steep hillside, and he was the first buck I saw of the morning, and he was just coming out of the open meadows and feeding his way towards the timber. And I shouldn't even say feeding. He was right. done feeding. The sun was not even on the meadow yet. It had barely risen, and he was getting out of there.
He's on a mission.
Mm-hmm. And John, his ass was that big around.
Yeah.
I mean, you immediately could just, when you looked at him,
just a big old bite.
You just knew that is a big, big deer in the body. And you know, that's what I've learned is that you can see a deer with big antlers.
Right.
And but if his body isn't striking, like, wow, that thing's built like a horse, his antlers are probably not as big as you think.
Right. It's in proportion.
Yeah.
And I have that problem, the opposite problem, in South Dakota when I hunt in South Dakota during
mm-hmm.
the rut.
Mm-hmm.
My buck I killed this year was like 300 and something pounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Big deer.
Just tank. You know, I'm used to looking at my 185-pound deer in Arizona,
right.
and you look at the rack and you're like, I don't know. That looks like a 150 buck.
It
and then
does.
You look at it again, and it's like, yo, that guy's 170 plus, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you point that out because I think – oh, did we unplug
no,
there?
No, we're good.
I'm glad you point that out because, you know, I've got screwed up on a few bucks over the years like that and shot bucks that were smaller than I thought they were. And
uh-huh.
also, John, I think I've maybe even let a few bucks go that were probably bigger than I thought they were because they're – if they have a big body, then
right.
their rack is going to not appear quite as large.
Right.
You know, and so anyways, that's how this buck was. And I'm like, man, he's built like a horse. He's really, really big. And, you know, his antlers are big.
And to look like that in the summer, too.
Yeah. And now we're down to the end of August where their velvet starts kind of flattening out.
Okay.
It's not like in,
yeah.
you know, July where it looks like marshmallows. You're
right,
just
right.
so puffy. And, so, you know, everything I'm telling you here, I'm taking 5 minutes to tell you what I saw in about 20 seconds.
Right.
So I'm like, man, big body, his he's walking away. You always got to be careful with that. You know, they'll fool you on that. But so that's why I mentioned his ass, because it was so big.
Right.
And I'm like, man, that's a big deer. And I'm starting to kind of look at his rack. I can see a great big cheater. And in my book, a great big cheater is about 4 inches or longer, mm-hmm. sticking off of his left side. And so I, you know, I got that in my brain. I thought, okay, big body. Cheater still has a heavy rack this late in the summer, and I'm thinking this is all I'm going to get to look at. He's going to walk in the trees. Well, just before he went in the trees, he stopped, and instead of walking straight away from me, he took a couple of steps to his left and put his head down and started feeding. So now I'm looking into the rack at a quartering angle.
Okay.
And so that made the cheater disappear, but now I can see his depth. And man, he's got 190. Potential rack with the depth of his forks, and just the way that he turned, I could only see into the left side of his rack. So like what I'm showing you right here, I couldn't really see the right side. So a little bit of this stuff is a guess, like okay, if the right side matches, that's a 190 framed buck. He's got a big cheater. He's two and a half miles away. There's probably stuff there I can't see,
right?
And so that's where I'm kind of getting the, you know, I think a giant's kind of starting at 200. So, you know, he was at least kind of right getting up to that. But I've also learned at a couple of miles, and then you get over there and you see him. Oh, man, he's got two on his bases. He's got a crown point there I didn't see.
See the mass better.
They usually get bigger is what I'm saying. So, man, I'm all excited. I'm like, this is a good buck. And so I had the BTXs on him. BTX with a 95 is 35 power.
Uh-huh.
And so I had my 25 to 50 Swaro ATS laying there too, and just took the BTX off, outdoorsman plate, just slapped it on, and got the ATS on there,
right?
Because I wanted to phone scope him too,
right.
And then and I had all that stuff ready. So by the time, you know, that's 10 seconds, you know, of screwing around, getting him back in there. So now I'm adding another 15 power. So now I go up to 15 power, and oh man, does he look good?
Yeah.
And so I'm going somewhere with this, I promise. So he's 25 yards out of the timber. But now he's not really in a hurry. He kind of got out of that open meadow, and he's kind of slowed down. I'm thinking I got time. So I'm screwing around. I'm getting the phone scope ready, you know, getting it on there, getting the iPhone on there and slapping it on. And, man, I blow up the iPhone, so I get rid of the dark ring around the edge. And I don't have the best eyes, okay? And I would have been probably that early in the morning. I probably didn't have my contacts in. And so I'm looking at just my iPhone screen. And, the sun's kind of up.
Yeah.
I can't see him on the screen.
Okay.
And I turn the microphone on to shoot a video.
Right.
And so I'm talking, and I'm thinking he's in the screen because I can see enough of the screen. I'm like, that's where he was in the meadow. Okay, there he is right there. I just saw this buck, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, as I'm looking at the screen, I'm like, guys, is he in there or not? So I pull the thing off.
Go back
and get up, and now I can't see him at all.
Oh, shit.
I'm like, oh, crap. Did I miss him? I mean, I don't know. I don't really dare look at the video because, you know, I don't want to miss him.
Right.
So I think I shut the phone off, or it might have just sitting there laying there recording, you know, listening to me cuss. And I'm looking. I can't find him, and he has walked into that timber is what I finally figured out. And so I picked up the phone, either turned it back on or the video was going, because I was trying to document it.
Remember all the details.
Yeah, and share it on Rock Slide. You know, guys love this stuff. So I'm like, I just saw a big buck. I don't think I got him on film. I don't know. I haven't reviewed the film. And as I'm sitting there talking, I'm looking at this spot, he walks out of the timber.
Right.
I'm like, oh my gosh, there he is again. So I, same scenario, slap the phone on there, get it back on. And now I'm looking right where he was walking. But again, I can't see well enough into the phone. Like, you know, he's 2.5 miles away. I mean, he's just a dot on the phone.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, is that him? And I let that run, you know, 10, 15 seconds. And then I pulled it off and I looked. And I couldn't see him. So I'm like, okay, I don't know what he is. I didn't want to review the video. I just need to keep my eyeballs glued to that hillside to see if he comes out. And then I see two more deer come out from the way he originally came. They had been in that meadow too. And again, just double confirmed that was a big buck, because there's 2 4-point style bucks there, and he dwarfed them in body size and rack size.
Right.
And of course, like, you know, they're younger bucks, you know, 2, 3, 4 years old, who knows, and they're out there just wandering around, you know, they're feeding, laying down, you know. I could have filmed them all day. In fact, I did. I got them on video. And I watched, you know, that must have been, I don't know, 7:30 in the morning. I sat there till almost noon.
Oh, wow, and they were out there just the whole time.
Those little bucks finally fed in, and where he fed into the timber, it was burnt. It was a little, like an old burn, like 20-year-old burn. So, you know, it was kind of grown up, but there was enough scattered timber in there. I just kept watching that and thinking, you know, I might see him, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's why I sat till noon. I thought he'd probably get up here pretty soon, and I never did see him. But I knew what I saw.
Right.
I knew that was a great buck. I don't need to go anywhere else. This is where I'm going until the season closes. Opens late August for archery and runs through early October. This is where I'm going to live. Had a friend that was going to go on the hunt with me. Got a hold of him. We had like 4 or 5 days till the season opened. We were in there for 7 days for archery. Got there the night before. And keep in mind, this is sort of a new area to me. I had scouted the unit before, but I had not scouted that individual mm-hmm. mountain. And so the first couple days of archery were kind of recon. I'm just kind of figuring out, like, how do we get over there? How do we get in there without screwing it up? It's about, I can't remember. It took an hour and a half to get in there on a horse, so that must be about 5 miles, 6 miles. Yeah. And then the mountain that the buck was on was, you know, kind of 1,000 feet above camp. And so the first couple of days, we filtering through bucks, you know, seeing a few here and there. It's not a very glassable mountain. In fact, it was a terrible place to archery hunt. Okay. It really was. I told my friend that too. I said, I found a giant buck. I said, but he's not in a great place to archery hunt. But what do? You can't be too picky. I said, no. We can go hunt all these 160s I've seen this summer, or we can go after this one. And, you know, it's Ryan Pimentel. He's one of my friends. And, oh, man, he don't look a gift horse in the mouth. He's like, no, we're going where the giant is. So we spent 7 days in there for archery, and we did not even get eyeballs on this buck.
Really?
We turned over 2 or 3 other bucks that were tempters, you know, 160, probably up into the mid 170s, right around in there. But, you know, neither of us wanted to shoot a buck like that
There was
a few other archery hunters there, John, but they were kind of staying up in the alpine. This is a little bit subalpine. These are deer that are, and this is what I'm finding in OTC units, is that the alpine, the big bucks are just not using it like they used to. And when I say alpine, I'm talking
guys are going up there now.
Yeah, and they're camping right in the open and building fires right in the open. Yeah. And, and I'm not knocking anybody. I did all that stuff too. But I just have kind of learned that bigger bucks are, you know, they're not going to be down in that thick dog hair stuff. There's no food there. But they like the little more broken stuff. Well, consequently, they're harder to hunt. So we spent 7 days in there for archery, never laid eyes on him. The rifle hunt opened just a short while later after that. So we were up there for rifle. And we just left the camp in there. Of course, I hung it in the tree so the bears didn't tear it up. And we just had an ultralight camp in there, even though we were using horses. Mm-hmm. And then we went in there. This part of the hunt, I brought Jordan Budd with me. Do you know who that is?
Yeah,
The videographer. She works for Rockslide. She's one of our writers, but she's got Running Water Media. That's just her own business too. So we hired her to come with us to document it, and we got 5 days of the hunt on film. That'll be released here in the next Wellward Expo. What are we? The 14th of February. Oh, happy Valentine's Day, honey. Sorry, I'm at the show and you're at the hotel.
That's why I brought mine with me.
You smart man, bro. All right. Anyway, so we'll have it out in about a week, probably the third week of February. And she documents kind of that 5 days of that hunt and what we did. And man, I don't want to spoil her film, so I don't want to tell you what happened. But it was a good hunt. I think there's going to be a lot in the film for people to watch, because I kind of went through what I do after these deer disappear out of the open country.
Okay.
And we kept turning over good bucks. We had a lot of fun. So it's called the hunt for, or the search for Rock Slide, because we named the buck Rock Slide because he lived in timber and rock slides. That really was And so watch for that on YouTube. So that hunt wrapped up early October, and then I started hunting some of that lower brush country when those units opened. Mm-hmm. And that unit there just really got hit with winter kill, but it was the only place my tag was open. And so I didn't turn anything over, John. Really, I think it opened like the 5th of October, ran until about the 20th, 25th. I probably got 6 or 7 days in there, and they weren't all at once, you know, mm-hmm. and checked a couple of the spots that I usually go to, and I just hardly turned over any bucks.
Really?
Got my son out. He did get a buck, a small buck, last night of the season. Had a great time. I mean, kind of the highlight of my year, him getting a buck. Made a great shot, you know, for a 13-year-old kid that has, you know, he's really only been hunting for the last couple of years. And you know, BB gun in the backyard, kind of stuff. We caught this this little buck out on an open hillside. Well, it wasn't an open hillside. It was a brushy hillside with an opening in the middle of it.
Okay.
And, you know, this is the last day of the season. And you know, I told him, we got to shoot any buck we see. You know, we need the meat. Dad hasn't done too well on this hunt. So, you know, let's make sure we get you one. So, excuse me, we spot this buck out in this little meadow. He's about 200 yards below us. And we had my son's friend with us. My son's got, probably everybody's got this. There's a lot of kids out there without dads, unfortunately, the world we live in, man. And that's why I appreciate you being a good dad and getting your son out there like you do. So we brought one of his friends who just through a series of circumstances doesn't have a dad to take him hunting. And he doesn't have a hunting license. Mm-hmm. He has not gone through hunter safety course, you know, and we don't even know if he likes to hunt yet,
right.
Put it that way. But we're like, hey,
we're going to make him.
we're going to bring him along. And this is part of the story. So we see the buck mm-hmm. out in this little meadow, and he's about 200 yards away. And now, you know, if he's you or me, you know, we drop down on one knee and, you know, we make
Let it happen, right? Yep.
Well, when you're working with kids, you kind of got to go at their pace. The buck is in that opening.
Yeah.
Do you see that rock? Right. You know, and they have a pair of binoculars they're sharing, you know,
right.
And so they're going back and forth, and it's not too stressful. The buck's just feeding, and he's got a couple of does there. He's not rutting them or anything, but
right.
You know, he's with a couple of does. He's a small enough buck. Hasn't left the does yet, and the only thing that's pressing is we got the sun's down or almost down. So
okay.
I'm thinking, yeah, we got to make this happen.
You're racing light, yeah.
Yeah, in 15 minutes, you're not going to be able to see very well down there. We can't really get closer because it's just too brushy.
Right.
You know, as soon as we drop,
you're going to lose sight of him. You're going to lose aspect. You're not going to have the angle.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm like, we got to find him here. So finally, his little friend, his name is Nate.
Okay.
Nate's like, oh, I see him. I see his eyes. He's getting all excited. I'm like, awesome. Okay, we got eyeballs on this. It's just we got to get the kid that has a hunt license to see him.
Right.
And so I'm pretty patient with my kids.
Right.
You know, I don't yell at them. I don't do any of that stuff. But, man,
good on you.
I'm starting to get freaking mad. My son's name is Cash. I'm like, Cash, that meadow, the only meadow you can see. Okay, and my son can actually see the does.
That's really what's
frustrating me.
Oh,
I'm like,
shit.
Dude, the buck is like 10 yards to the left of the does. He's quartering towards us, but he's mostly broadside. I mean, he's in a shootable position. We can shoot him right now.
Right, right.
And through all the whispers and the back and forth and passing the binoculars and scooting our butts around on the ground, he heard us.
Oh, yeah.
And so now he's not feed anymore. He's looking up at us, I'd say semi-alert. You know, he's not all bunched up ready to go.
Right, right.
But, you know, in this course,
something's up, but.
Yeah, when they go from feeding.
He's not old enough to know what that is.
Yeah, he's not. No, exactly. And when they go from, you know, feeding for, you know, constantly to now they're not even taking a bite anymore, you know that we got to hurry, you guys. And
right.
So finally, I can tell I'm getting mad. And I said, son, I don't know what to tell you, man. I've told you everything I can tell you. And, you know, I'm getting intense. I don't want to do that to him.
Yeah.
Get him all flustered. So I said, Nate, just see if you can help him find the buck. And so I've got a tripod. I don't carry shooting sticks because I always have a tripod. And, you know, I kind of got it all ready for him. And, you know, they're whispering back and forth. And my son's frustrated, too. He's like, I just can't see him. He's kind of giving up. And all of a sudden, he's just like, I see him. And he's like, Dad, but I can only see his head.
Uh-huh.
And so what has happened is the buck is behind a little piece of sagebrush, John, that's probably, you know, just we're just talking a scraggly sagebrush, not a big, thick one, the kind of one with my good optics. I can see
right through
the sagebrush, and I can see the shoulder, but he can't.
Right.
It's just broken up enough. He's like, Dad, all I can see is his head. And, you know, I don't like to have my kids try to shoot him in the head
that
close. And I'm like, son, can you see that little piece of sagebrush that's right to the left of me? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, his vitals are right behind that. He's like, yeah, but I'll shoot the sagebrush. I'm like, I know you can't see this, but I said, but I can see right through that sagebrush.
Yeah.
And he's not 10 feet behind that sagebrush.
He's six inches. Yeah.
Exactly. He's in it. And I said, if you will just aim at that piece of sagebrush, son, and make sure you're below the level of his back. He's shooting a 308, by the way, and at 200 yards, he's probably 3 inches low. I said, if you just aim at that sagebrush, make sure you're not above his back, you can hit him. And because of all the previous frustrations we were having,
right.
I just shut my mouth. Because I just thought, okay, he knows what to do. Man, that little sucker got up on that little KDC tripod, and he shot faster than I thought he was going to, which is never a good sign, right?
Right, yeah.
I've seen you helping your little girl. You would take your time, and I can't really say he took his time, but he shot, and the buck ran.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, okay. Correct. Well, this is what I thought. This is what I said. I said, okay, son, you did your job, buddy. You did it, man. Way to go. Give me a high. You saw that buck. I mean, we're celebrating. But I'm not saying anything about him hitting it because right. I didn't think he did. I right. just thought, oh, he blew it. And he's like, yeah, do you think we got him? I'm like, I don't know, son, but I don't want you to feel bad about that. I said, that is a tough shot. It's getting dark. You're shooting through the brush. I said, you did everything perfect. Don't worry right. about it. I said, now we're going to go down there, and we're going to look for blood. I said, but I don't want you to worry about this. Sometimes we can only do so much. And, you know, I'm just trying to let him down easy because right. I am 98% sure he missed this buck. Okay? So we gather up our gear, and, you know, I'm kind of letting him and Nate have their moment. I can hear him back there. No, I think you nailed it, man. Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty sure I got it. You know, they're just talking. And we get down there, and, of course, you know, I'm a blood guy. Right. I go right to the blood. I don't start making circles yep. and stuff. No, I've lost too much. Yeah. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so I'm over there, and I found the bush. Yep. I found the exact bush. And so I'm getting back on the bush, and I'm looking, did a bullet even go through these branches? You know, I'm trying to look through there, and Cash is kind of by me, and I'm like, look for blood, you guys. I can't even see where the bullet hit the brush, but it's sparse enough. Maybe it missed it. No cut hair. And so I'm thinking, not good. And at first I'm trying to keep the boys with me, but – they're wanting, oh, we're going to go over here. He ran that way. We're going to go that way. And I finally thought, you know what? They're not, it's all right. It's getting dark. It was right. buck's probably not hit. I said, you guys go ahead. I said, just walk slow and look at the ground. We're looking for blood. And so this is where it's funny. So I'm still over there, John. I mean, I'm like, you know, down on the ground, you know, right. I haven't moved 6 yards from that bush yet. You know, I'm looking for that first bound where some blood right. hit the ground. And I hear my son, this is so funny. He's like, Dad, there's a deer over here. Well, we're beyond shooting light now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the first thing I'm thinking, is it the buck you shot? He's like, I don't know. And I said, well, if you don't know, don't shoot him. He goes, well, he's dead. I think he's dead. I'm like, he's dead or you think he's dead? So I'm in my mind, I'm trying to process. I'm thinking, I thought you were talking about a deer you just saw standing up. He's, right. I'm like, well, is it your buck? He's like, I don't know. And you know, and he's probably like 60 yards away, and I can't see him. I can just hear him because that's how thick that brush right. is right there. And I'm like, well, walk over there. Be ready. Get your gun up. Go see. Does he have antlers? I mean, what's going on? Because this is the other thing, too. It's the other thing I'm thinking is, you know.
He shot a doe.
Yeah, no, maybe shot a doe. Or I found, you know, you find dead deer in the woods.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and where he's saying, I don't know if it's mine, I'm thinking maybe we just ran across a dead deer. Who knows? Right. You know, there's coyotes up there, cats, yeah, all yeah, that yeah. stuff. So I said, walk over there. Does it have horns? And he yells back, it does. I said, Cash, that's got to be your buck. And I finally got over there, and it was his buck. Dude, he center punched that thing. Take that line behind the front leg, yeah. go up one third, come back 2 inches. He nailed that sucker. I mean, it's one of the best shots I've seen for a little kid.
That's awesome.
You know, just shooting a 4-power scope, and then the emotion kind of set in. Because keep in mind, this whole time I'm thinking my son didn't hit this buck. This buck is gone. And, I mean, I had to even walk over and put my hand on it and feel, is it warm? Is this the buck? And so, anyways, that's my kid's story, and my favorite one of the year. You can tell. So that was awesome. About the end of October. Back to the muzzleloader hunt that opened in November, a few weeks later, and I had been in this unit before, but like I said, I had never scouted it, so I'm relying on Corey. Mm-hmm. So you know, I spent November, you know, putting the final touches on the muzzleloader. My son had a tag with us too, like I told you, it's pretty easy to tag. And the plan is Corey and I were going to hunt the first. I think it was open like 13 days, 14 days, and I could cover about the first 9 or 10, okay. And then Corey, it's not a long ways from our house, you right. know, like in 2 hours. So the plan was have a camp, have a road camp, and it's kind of a quasi, a little bit of backcountry stuff, a little bit of open sage stuff, and a little bit of front country stuff.
Cool.
And Corey had seen bucks in kind of all those different zones, and so we went over there. We went without my son. He couldn't miss a bunch of school, and it was open over Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And my son had that 3-day weekend off, so that was the plan. We'll hunt the first week. Then I can learn the unit a little bit more, and then when I bring my son, you know, we can find right. him. You know, he doesn't need to shoot a big buck. And help him. So we get there. We got there the day before the season. Corey took – these deer are just getting to the winter range about that time. Okay. But if there hasn't been a lot of snow, some of them are still in the high country. High country there is probably about 9,000 feet. Winter range probably 5,500, six, right around yeah. in there. So you got that kind of whole zone that you got to look at. And November had come off mild. You know, we had had hardly any snowstorms. The only snow that was in the unit was up on the peaks. And so we were thinking, it's going to be pretty hard. These deer are going to be pretty spread out. And So Corey took me out that night, really got my first eyes on the good deer country, where he's seen bucks and everything that night. He concluded in 20 minutes that these deer are not on the winter range yet, Rob.
Right.
He says they're not down here where they were a couple of years ago when we had all the snow. And I said, okay, well, great. Tomorrow we'll just spread out and start looking. So the next morning was opening morning. And when I say front range, so the winter range is down in the Roley Flat sagebrush. Okay, so the front range stuff is just right above that. Basically the lower slopes of the mountain range itself. Just imagine a mountain range running north and south, and the winter range is in the valley, and then the transitional range is kind of the middle. And so that day, we just started kind of hitting that front range stuff, and there was a few deer down there. We were seeing does, and you know, you've heard me talk about the rut before, John. You've got a lot of experience with the rut. There's so many myths about the rut, and it was like it's been about the 20th of November, 25th, something like that. And so I know they're rutting.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody tells
me. Yeah, the weather, the this, that, yeah.
They have to have babies the 1st of June, so they got to get pregnant this couple of weeks right here, okay? And so, but we're not seeing a lot of rutting activity. We're seeing, you know, doe groups, you know, the little 2 points running around are rutting a little bit. But, you know, no big bucks around the does. It's pretty open country, fairly easy to glass. So, you know, Corey took me around kind of more almost still in the scouting mode. Like, there's usually deer here, let's check these. And then what our plan was, we had two trucks. And then that week, we were just, once I knew all where to inventory the does, I was just going to start hitting those. And then, you know, he's a pretty hardy dude. He's like, I love that high country. I'm going to go up there. He killed his biggest buck up there. That's all hiking stuff. I said, hey, you go tear that up. I'll watch this low stuff. So that was the plan. And, you know, I'm a yakker. So, you know, I talk to people when I'm in the unit and everything. And I've kind of learned I'll talk to the hunters, definitely. If somebody's sitting there off the side of the road, hey, how's it going? But I don't needle them. You know, most guys are going to try to – they're going to throw you a red herring anyways. Oh, big buck over there. You know, they'll send you over where they've never seen a big buck at all. And so that by late that afternoon, you know, we had glass since daylight. So, you know, we got 4 or 5 hours behind the glass. We know where some doe groups are and everything. Corey's like, hey, I'm going to go hit some of that high country. I got to take my four-wheeler up this fire road, and then I got to hike about 2 miles. So I got to leave about 2. So he leaves camp about 2 on his four-wheeler. I grab a quick nap, like 15 minutes, jump up, make a cup of coffee, and then I head back up to what I thought was one of the nicer looking spots. It had, there's no oak brush there like Colorado and Utah. It's a lot of mountain mahogany. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. But, dude, deer love it. I mean, that stuff, especially when you get into the stuff that's like taller than they are, 8, 9, 10 feet tall, and you can't really see into it. So some of this front range at this mouth of this canyon had a bunch of that. And I thought, well, I'm just going to go over there. And that stuff is west facing. So follow me here. There's a tip here. So I parked the pickup out in the Sage Flats west of that brush so that I can look into it.
Right.
Just as the sun's going down. That was my plan.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching the brush, and, you know, drinking coffee. I mean, this is nothing hardcore. And I can't remember if I saw any does. I really don't remember. But I saw a flatbed truck go up the road headed into the canyon. And as the guy went by, I thought, that's not a hunter. That's a cowboy. And this is cattle country.
Right.
There's cows around. Man, I'd love to talk to that guy. And he was gone, and I watched for a while. I wasn't seeing anything. And so I pulled further up in the canyon. I might have moved the truck 3/4 of a mile, you know, so I kind of lost my visibility. But now I'm more into the canyon where I can glass some of the actual canyon slopes. And, well, here comes this guy. So it's been about, you know, 30 minutes since I seen him, and he comes driving back down the road, and I thought, oh, he's probably looking for cows. So I got out of the truck as he come by and just kind of waved at him, and he stopped. Central Idaho cowboy. I mean, he's got the handkerchief tied around his neck. His hat's older than you and me put together. You know, he's spitting Copenhagen on the ground. And I said, hey, man, I just was wondering if you're running cows in this country. He goes, actually, our cows are all out of here. He goes, I'm up here just looking for some big bucks to look at. He goes, once in a while, there's a good buck right in here. And it's in my mind, I'm thinking, score. That's the second person today that's told me this is a big buck area. And I said, oh, well, I said, I got a buddy with me. I said, he's further up in a different drainage. I said, the muzzleloader hunt opens right now. And so I'm muzzleloader hunting, you know, just trying to see what he'd tell me. Oh, dude, this guy was a wealth of information. He's like, oh, it's open right now? I said, yeah, just open this morning. He goes, I haven't seen him for a couple weeks, but it was kind of the reason I drove up here. He goes, there was a pretty good buck on this face breeding does the last couple of weeks. And he says, and there's some other ones up the canyon. You know, I mean, this guy's just laying out like 30 years of information for me, you know, further up where that little cabin is that used to be where the firefighters would camp. He says, there's some deer right there. So I'm just listening to this guy. This is great. And, but he said there was a pretty good buck on this face a couple of weeks ago. And he says, but I haven't seen him. Well, it's all brushy and stuff. Yeah. And so anyways, he left. And so, I drove further up the road so that I could, the road climbed up in the canyon. So if I went up the road like 500 yards, I had another, you know, 300 feet of elevation. And I'm telling everybody how to road hunt here.
Yeah.
And so now instead of kind of looking up at the brush, I'm looking into the brush, you know, just a little more level.
Right.
And I think I saw some does. Like something was keeping my interest. I really can't remember. I look at so many deer, I lose track of them. But, or it could have just been, hey, I'm in where I need to be and it's going to get dark pretty soon. And, so I'm watching this hillside, okay? And I'm watching it about as long as this whole podcast is going to take, you know, the last hour of light. And as it started to get down, you know, we're hunting open-sided muzzleloaders. You know, you can't hunt to a legal shooting light end because you can't see your front sight. So I glassed it, didn't see much going on. I thought, well, I'm just going to work my way out of this canyon, just that last little bit of light that we can have. Drove the truck down another couple hundred yards and pulled up on an embankment to get a little more elevation. Throw the glass up, and I see a deer walking through the brush. John, like 80 yards up the hill from right where I'm at. Not even really where I was going to glass. I was going to glass some other stuff. And just like what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, I thought, that is a big body deer. But he's in thick enough brush, I couldn't even see a rack.
Right.
And I'm like, that's a big deer. You know, so I'm trying to watch him and all by himself. And he goes behind some bushes. Then I can't see him. Then all of a sudden he pops out and he stops. And I think he heard me. He had obviously heard me because I don't think I even had that pickup off for 5 minutes. So he had to heard that pickup running. And he stopped. And when he stopped, he had half of his head behind a mahogany. Okay. Mm-hmm. But his whole front shoulder was exposed almost back to his butt. And hoss.
Yeah.
We're talking big bodied deer. And I could see his antlers. This is, back up a little bit, the reason those tags are easy to draw, because this is not a Boone and Crockett unit.
Right.
It hasn't kicked out a Boone and Crockett buck in 30 years. Just genetically doesn't grow giant antler deer.
Right.
But I could see by that one antler, I could see he was outside of his ears, well outside of his ears. So I'm thinking, you know, that's a mid to upper 20s buck right there.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a big body. And what else am I going to find in this unit?
Right.
I only know of one buck that's better has been killed than that. Well, I'm not even legal right now. I'm sort of on the road. So I have to move the truck up the off of the embankment and down into the road and then pull over onto the left side of the road because in Idaho, you got to be off the shoulder of the road. And so I pulled that truck over to where I'm almost ready to fall into the creek because that's where the way they built the road, the shoulder was just steep right down to the creek. And I, literally that last, like, 3 feet.
Oh.
I'm like, because you know, you don't want to shoot from the road in Idaho. They'll get you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I got that truck over. I think I'm legal, and I changed my angle a little bit, but I could still see him. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was a better
That's
angle.
Crazy that he stood there.
Yeah, dude, he did. And you know what? This is. Have you seen this though, John? Have you ever like had a chance to watch enough big bucks to notice that they move very intentionally and they don't panic. Even when you think they should panic, like, dude, run, the flipping hunter's right there, and you're just standing there. But I think that they're wise. I think that has worked for them so many times. And, you know, that buck.
Yeah, how many times they see a cowboy come through there and, you know, he don't know you're a hunter.
Exactly. And even if he does know I'm a hunter, I think, because that was the other thing, too. There was other guys driving up and down that road. I'd seen other guys that day. That his odds are better holding still, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
And keep in mind, his face is behind a chunk of brush. That's why I can see that antler. So he stood there while I moved that truck. That probably took 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I had to reach back, uncase my gun. I had it primed because in Idaho you can have a primed gun in a truck. And he's still standing there. And I slowly take the gun out. And I get legal. I'm off the road, but I'm still in the truck. And, man, I lay that thing lay that bead right behind his front shoulder. And the last thing through my mind is, I've only shot one other buck on opening day, but you just usually don't see the bus buck opening day.
No.
You've heard me talk about that. Yeah. But I'm like, this is too good. I got a buck in range,
bird in
big body.
You sound like me now.
What am I doing? Boom! And John, this thing about muzzleloaders, man, is when you hit animals with 300 and 400 grain bullets, even if they're not going very fast, it rocks them, and it just dropped him. And that, John, it dropped him like a sack of spuds falling out of a Cessna. I was just shocked when I saw how fast he hit the ground. I thought, I must have spine shot him. He hit the ground. But he hit the ground, and he rolled over about twice, and then he jumped up and took off the other way that he had come from, where I had originally seen him walking, which was pretty deep brush. And as he was running away, I thought, oh, man, that is a good buck. I mean, I was glad I shot. Because that was the first time I saw his whole rack. And so he ran into the brush, but he only went about 10 yards, and then he fell. And that hillside was so steep that he was on that he rolled all the way. I mean, I'm thinking, man. Oh, break your antlers. You know, I mean, I could hear him. He's only 60 yards away, rolling down the hill in front of me, crashed into the bottom. It's a heavy creek bottom. I couldn't see him when he crashed. So it's one of those things. I'm just thinking, I just killed a big buck from the road. I can't even believe this. So I had to move the truck again because I couldn't get out. Remember, I told you I had to get off the shoulder of the road, you know, to get legal. If I opened the door, I'd have fallen in the creek. So I had to move the truck and nowhere to park it. I had to drive it down the road 60 yards and get a parking spot, cross the creek, you know, reloaded the gun, did all. I was pretty sure he was toast, but you don't want to walk up on a buck without a loaded gun. And went over there, and dude, here he was, piled up in the bottom. Beautiful buck, 26 and a half inches wide.
Nice.
I'd hit him at the just behind the back rib. Hit him a little further back than I thought, but luckily he was quartered a little bit more than I thought. So I caught the back of the lungs as it went through. Didn't hit him in the spine. That it was a 360 grain muzzleloader bullet out of a 45 caliber muzzleloader.
Okay.
Man, it did the number on him. For not hitting any big structure, no shoulder bones, no nothing. Man, it did the number on him. So I got my little inReach.
Yeah.
And I don't have cell phone reception, but I've got my inReach. And Corey's up in the high country, and I figured he's probably got cells. So I sent him a thing. Hey, dude, I got a buck. Well, of course he thinks I'm screwing with him. It's like, man, Robbie didn't have a freaking buck, you know, and he's just thinking I'm messing with him. And I finally, it was about an hour after dark, he got out of there. And he's like, you really have a buck? I said, dude, he's right here in the creek bottom. Come on up. So we went up. I couldn't get him out of the creek bottom. You know, we didn't want to quarter him up to pack him 50 yards off the road. So we worked together with four-wheeler straps and, you know, got him drug up onto the bank and everything.
Yeah.
There's a video on Rock Slide's YouTube if you want to go see us loading him in the truck and everything. And I don't have the age back yet on him. But, you know, my son got a buck later that week.
Nice.
You know, decent four-point. Whole other story. We won't bore your people to death with that one. We already got two buck stories in this one. So but when I got his home and caped it out and I laid the heads together, I knew my buck had a Roman nose, but I didn't realize how much until I laid it next to my son's buck. So I don't have the age back. It's the lab right now. Hit me up in a month or two. I should know. This buck's going north of 4 years old. He might even be six. He's an old, definitely an older buck. The only thing that threw me off a little bit, he didn't have a big track, but sometimes they don't. Some, you know, they're just like people, you know. Some guy has a size 8, some guy has a size 12. But by every other indication, he's an old buck. Corey kicked butt. He stayed on that hunt for, I think he ended up at 9 days. That ended up being the best buck we saw.
Really?
He saw one other one he didn't get a great look at. That, like I said, it's just not a Boone and Crockett unit.
Right.
You know, it doesn't, you know, your bucks start to top out in the mid to upper 20s. They're not super heavy. He saw another buck like that. So by the time it ended, I thought, man, I'm kind of glad I shot that buck. I mean, I was that day. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm like, I'm probably not going to find a better one. And and we didn't. So anyways, bud, you asked for a buck story. There you go.
That's a good one. I liked it. Good. I liked the buck. So the whole time you're telling the story about your son, I didn't want to interrupt you. I got the solution.
Let's hear it.
The solution.
The bags, man.
I'm telling you.
I hear you.
The Phoenix shooting bags.
Yeah.
And I do it for the kid. I do it for my clients.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's a point that you're going to want your son to learn how to figure it out on his own, obviously, too. But, like, with clients, I literally set up the bags. I set the gun up. I put the dang deer in the scope.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually set it up where the crosshairs are. Like, so here's the deer, and the crosshairs are up here.
Uh-huh.
And then they squeeze the back bag, and the crosshairs
come
down.
Yeah, gotcha. So with my son's buck, the only thing that I don't think. Remember, I said I had to set it up on a tripod.
Yeah, so I'll show you how to shoot.
Okay, because you'd have to show me that, because we had to get that. You know, viewers can't see this. I'm holding my hand about the height of a waist of a shorter man.
Right.
We had to get him up about that high to be able to shoot over the brush that was directly in front of him. If he would have laid down on the ground, we couldn't have seen the buck.
So
what do you do?
If you have one of those tripod or tripod adapter things that you stick your. Mm-hmm.
That's what we got, a V. Okay, V. This one's just a simple V. The gun just slides in it.
So take your backpack, have them sit it like Indian style, crisscross applesauce, whatever you want to say, whatever's PC now. Put the backpack on his lap. Uh-huh. Put the bag. So the
backpack I'm gonna show right here.
You guys can't see this, but I got this stuff in front of me. So sit it like this. This is here, okay? Mm-hmm. And you put this here.
I see. So you tip the bag up. Okay. Gotcha.
And now.
Gotcha.
And it's honestly, it's like laying prone. That's how steady it is.
Mm-hmm. And so if the bag, like even with where you're sitting right now, I think you'd have had to bring the bag up this way.
Okay.
That's how far off the ground he was. So let me get on the ground here. Uh-huh. He was like this.
Okay.
Okay, so he's holding the tripod, and he's like this.
Right.
That's how steep the hill was. So see, the steeper the hill, the higher elbow.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would think you'd have to
The other way to do it is, so and I always carry all the bags.
Uh-huh.
The strap is here. You put it through.
Yeah.
You
know,
do it like this. But, and you put the bag, not this one, but you put it
here. Gotcha, so you can attach it to your bicep. Let me see that.
Yeah.
So I can replicate the shot right here.
Yep.
Because I was sitting 12 inches from him the whole time. So
right. And so all he has to do is squeeze the bag to make so the gun rests. You're going to want it like that.
Yeah.
And the gun's going to sit on top of
there. The gun's going to go, okay, so, okay.
Right. Yeah, so you don't have to have this front arm on the gun.
No,
this arm,
he would have just been touching the tripod all he would have done.
Right.
That's what he did anyways.
Okay.
I mean, I guess I guess you wouldn't have to.
Yeah.
But awesome, man.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Thanks for the demo.
Yeah, no worries. Matter of fact, there you go.
Hey.
Those are yours.
All right, man. Thank you. I'll give those a shot, seriously. Tell me how else you can use them. I mean, do you use these at the range too?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were designed to, you know, since they're so lightweight, obviously, you know, just clip them like this. This is the front bag.
So you got attached to your top of your pack.
Yeah, and they can connect to each other and stuff. But I use them as glassing pads sometimes, you know.
So you sit on them and everything. They're that durable.
You know?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So. I'll give them a shot, man. And I'm just using the Cabela's bag right now.
Yeah.
And it's a bean bag.
Yeah.
So on the front end, you squeeze it to adjust your –
You know,
once you're close.
Right.
Same concept with these.
Yeah. So these right now, these are kind of hard.
Yep.
They just need to be broken a little bit. You need to.
Gotcha. So they'll soften up a little bit and everything.
Well, if I showed you, they'll be more like, so this one, this is that TBD bag. Mm-hmm. This, you can adjust.
Gotcha.
So now it'll end up being like that.
Yeah, so soft like that. So same thing. So then I can dial in that last little bit. So the last buck that I wounded.
Set up like this, you know, so you can, if you need more, you can put a couple rolls in it, and now it's harder.
Gotcha.
So.
That's what I was going to say. The last buck I wounded, it was in 2014. I ended up getting him, and I recovered the meat, but it wasn't pretty. And I shot him at about 420, which wasn't extremely far, but the reason I was thinking about it as you were talking about that, it was the same position my son had to shoot from. You couldn't lay down.
Yeah.
The hill was too steep, and there was too much brush in front of me. The buck was below me.
Right.
So, you know, when you lay down on a buck that's below you and you got brush on yours, that's what you're looking at. And so I had to get in that same position to shoot, and I shot off of a tripod, but there was no way to balance my stock other than my shoulder, and so I guess I see what your point, because this is what I remember. The buck was laying down. He gave me all day,
right?
And he was laying down, and I put the crosshairs on him, Leopold 14 I think I was shooting, and I took the shell out of the chamber, and I just kept squeezing the trigger. And every time I squeezed the trigger and the firing pin would go off, it was on the vitals. So I thought, I got this. I think I might have tried it twice or something.
Got it.
Like I said, he gave me all day, so I jack a shell in. I lay back down, same position. Mm-hmm. So for your listeners, I'm sitting on the ground with my front knee up, and then my left hand holding the head of my tripod.
Right.
And then, but my right elbow is out no man's land. Exactly. Right. Okay. So even though I had practiced that shot twice, maybe even three times, I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Let me back up. You know, don't you always know if you hit them when the gun goes off? I mean, pretty much, don't you? Right as the gun went off, I pulled it back. Just enough to, instead of being on his, you know, right, the crease behind his shoulder because of the way he was laying, when it went off, it was clear back in his paunch. Ugh. And sure enough, that's right where I hit him. So anyways, I'm just letting you know that, that if that's always a problem. I get the whole thing about, I mean, I can rest my butt on the ground, my gun butt on the ground if I'm shooting flat or I'm shooting up. But anyways, maybe you should do a video for your reader or your listeners to show them how. So basically, you're pinching the bag underneath your arm and then putting the gun on.
Yep.
So that would have helped.
Yep. We're doing a bunch of situational shot. As a matter of fact, so all the guys that are coming in for my late rifle javelina hunt next week, basically, we're doing a shooting school for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be all situational. We're going to – hopefully I'm going to try to film it. I don't know.
All right, man. Dude, definitely film it, man.
Yeah.
Film it. And yeah. We'd love to send some Rock Slide guys over there. Lots of shooters on there that love that stuff. So
cool.
All right, buddy. Man.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. Always
a
pleasure.
Thank you very much, John.
All right. Take it easy. Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there. A lot of posts that go hand-in-hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.